Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Second City podcast. I'm Daniel Sketchley.
And I'm Callum Byrne.
And we're here to talk about all the goings-on at Blues and Villa over the last week. Obviously, Blues had two huge games in the Championship in their bid to stay up on the back of some huge news coming out from the ownership on Tuesday night. And Villa had a huge week as well. Obviously, they played Lille in the Europa Conference League quarterfinals last week, and then had a huge game away at tabletop as Arsenal in the Premier League as well. So loads to talk about, loads to get through. Cal, how are you? You're doing okay?
Pretty good, thanks, Dan. It's a happy week this week, isn't it? Last week was very down, and this week's going to be a high one, I think.
Yeah, I think morale's probably a little bit, probably the highest it's been for a while. Because both teams had really good weekends. I suppose the only thing that could annoy us is that the other team did well, especially for me. I had a really good Saturday and then saw the Sunday. I was like, God's sake. But really good. We're proper in the running now as well. Although it's a deceptively cold April day, I must say. It feels a bit wintry out in terms of temperature. But
I don't know if it's been like this up in Birmingham today, but we've had all the seasons down south. We've had hail, we've had rain, we've had glorious sunshine, gale force winds. I'm expecting it to snow any minute now. It's proper April.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same here. Sweet. Shall we get into what we're wearing, first of all? Start where we always do. Both gone away, it looks like, off the top of our heads. But yeah, should we get into it?
Absolutely.
Sweet.
I can't remember who guessed first last week.
I think I guessed first last week. So you go for it this week.
Okay. Well, yeah, I assume this is away because it's a yellow Le Coq Sportif number with a Flybe sponsorship. Another one of these Birmingham City kits with the badge in like an oval shield. Two pinstripes that to kind of where the shoulder panels meet the sleeve panels.
Quite a big collar on it.
And a fold-up collar with no button or popper. The Flybe sponsor probably helps because that means it's not, well, we know it's not modern for a couple of reasons. One of them being Flybe don't exist anymore. It's mid-2000s. So, well, early to mid-2000s. So we're going to go 0203.
1 year off. This is 2003-04. So this kit is 20 years old this year. This is the away kit from that season. This was, so 0203 was our first year back up in the Premier League. That was like the phones for you season. The Premier League phones for you season were like Dougherty and all that, the Inkelman season. This was I think I went to my first Blues game the following season, I think. So I wasn't like regularly, I wasn't really into football just yet. But first of all, Blues away kit, lovely kit, like absolutely lovely kit in my opinion.
An original as well, that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can tell. Blues yellow away kit, absolutely proper. Very of its time. I absolutely love it. I think it's a glorious kit. And a really great season until we had a season under McLeish where we got one more point and finished one place higher. But for a long time, it was our best Premier League season. And we really kicked on from staying up the year before. I think we finished 13th the year before. We finished 10th this season, and that was actually the lowest we'd been all season, really, with about 8 games to go. I think we were like 6th or something, and we were in and around the top 6 for virtually the whole season. I think by November we were like 4th, so we were having a really great season. And then we only won, I don't think we won a game in our last 8 games, so that saw us kind of slowly slide out of the European places, kind of classic Blues, which is kind of mad that people were even talking about that at the time. But so good was the season up to that point. And I'd say the 3 signings that really did that for us. We didn't make many signings going into the season, but we made 3 that were huge. We signed Mike Taylor as a goalkeeper, and he went on to play for Blues for, when did he leave? I think he left in 2011. So he was with us for about 8 seasons. He was our starting goalkeeper for like the next 5-6 years, probably. And he was absolutely outstanding. I liked, Nico Vassen was a good goalkeeper, but Mike Taylor was the next step that we needed at that point in time. The other one was David Dunn, who we signed for, I think it was like £5 million from Blackburn, who was that kind of, him and Savage in midfield were absolutely outstanding. And then the biggest one of all on loan from Chelsea was Mikhail Fossil, came in this season. I think he scored, I think it was 17 Premier League goals, which if you can imagine for like a team that had only been promoted the year before, like so the year 2 years before, I should say, 17 goals. That's an outstanding return. He was absolutely outstanding, and he was the prolific goal scorer we needed to take us up to that next level. And he stayed with us for, I think it was 5 seasons, but frustratingly, he only really had like three. He had so many long-term injuries that he only really had like 3 seasons of playing regularly for us. But his first season was by far the best. He was absolutely amazing this season. Most memorable game, though, would definitely be the Villa away game. So we did the double over Villa the year before, and we did the double over Villa the year afterwards. We didn't beat you in either game this season. We actually drew both games this season. But I would argue, like, of games I like don't remember and definitely wasn't at or anything, the Villa away game from this season looks like one I would have... I can't imagine how mad it must have been. So Villa went 2-0 up. This was in the, so we played at Villa Park in the second game. You know, so we played at St Andrews first. It was 0-0. Played at Villa Park the second time. Villa were 2-0 up and kind of coasting, really. Fossell pulls one back. And Sturgeon equalised, and I think it was like the 93rd minute or something. Which must, it was like the last kick of the game, right in front of the away end. Because the Villa Park away end used to be like behind the goal.
Yes, the North Stand.
Yeah, and I can't imagine how that must have been absolute carnage. So yeah, great season. Kind of wish I had more of a memory of it. But yeah, so yeah, 2003-04 away, this yellow one is, yeah.
What do you think about this one?
So it's a black Nike kit. That sponsors FX Pro.
Trade for it.
Trade
like
Forex
a pro.
Like a pro.
There's a nice bit of claret and blue checkerboarding on the side panels on each side.
I think
on the inside of the badge that you can't see, it says Pride of Birmingham.
I think that's probably early 2010s. I'm going to say 2010-11 away.
You are on a roll at the moment, I guess, of these, Dan. It's the inner villain inside you.
A bit embarrassing, yeah. I need to get worse at these. It's normally, I don't know, I feel like if I remember, it's probably one where we played you or something. Like.
Yes, I don't think we would have
I don't know
won
if
it
you played that kit,
derby,
but I recognise like the checkered, like, under the...
Yeah.
On the inside and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So this is 10-11. Obviously, this was the one and only season we had with Gerard Houllier in charge, where we somehow finished ninth in the Premier League, which was always a surprise at the end of the year because we were in a relegation battle for a large portion of the season and then just had a really good run right at the back end of the season where we won our last two games out of nowhere against Arsenal and Liverpool. So there's an Arsenal away, which is... a theme I think we'll come on to was winning in this exact shirt. This is obviously the summer of maybe where things started to fall away for Aston Villa after the glorious years under Martin O'Neill. He obviously left like 2 days before the start of the season, or maybe 3 days. Literally as we hit the start of the season, Martin O'Neill left after he fell out with the owner, Randy Lerner. So Kevin McDonald took charge from the first game of the season up until early September. So he was in charge for a good month at the start of the year before Gerard Houllier and Gary McAllister came in. Interesting one as well. We lost James Milner in the summer, which is obviously what caused Martin O'Neill to go on to leave us. And we were very sort of up and down throughout the season. I guess classic mid-table, but we did start to fall into a relegation battle. It's why we signed Darren Bent in the January. We smashed our then transfer record to sign him for £18 million, which would rise to 24 from Sunderland. We also signed the heavily forgettable Jean McCoon in that January. And, of course, we signed a Premier League great in Robert Pires for a six-month loan. I think we talked about him in maybe worst January signings. Yeah. He might have made the bench, if I remember, because he was like 37 or something and he was crocked, really. He just couldn't run. Largely kind of forgettable season. It had its highs, as I said. It had a really bad low in in, of course, the League Cup. It was more the home shirt, I suppose, where we did obviously lose to you in that very famous Second City derby, where it was Zigic scored in the last minute, which will be forever
Yeah.
haunting.
Great night.
And
Great night.
the other two were obviously draws as well, because it's an era
Yeah.
of it was this sort of era was either draws or Villa wins.
Yeah, I think the home one, so our home one, I think was only like a month after the cup game. And I think it was like 17th v 18th or something. It was 16th v 18th. It was a proper, it felt like a real relegation. So, two teams right down the bottom, which is quite rare, really, for like a
Yeah.
second seed. Oh. Did you lose 6-0 to Newcastle this season? Was that this season?
Oh, probably yes, it was the second day of
Yeah.
the season, yeah. So we won on the opening day against West Ham despite not having a manager, and then classically went to St James's Park and got absolutely pumped.
Yeah, I remember.
So
Because you missed a penalty at like 0-0, I think, as well. John
yeah, I think
Carew. I remember
did Andy
watching it,
Carroll
John.
score a hat trick maybe?
Possibly, yeah. I remember John Carew. Was it John Carew? Absolutely skied a penalty at 0-0, and then it was just downhill from there. Love it.
Yeah, but we didn't go down this year, so can't
Oh,
complain.
didn't win a trophy either, to be fair. Yeah.
It could be the opposite this year.
Well, yes, who knows? Who
Ugh.
knows? Cool. Shall we get into it then? Because we got four games to cover and then preview in this weekend's games as
Yes.
well. We played first, so should we get to Blues first?
Yeah, take it away.
Sure. Blues played. So Blues had two huge home games in the league this week. So at the start of, I think this time it's been, it feels like this, you know how like a double game week can feel like so long ago. Like the first
Yeah.
game can feel like so long ago. But I won't spend too long on the Cardiff game. I think we were 20. Were we 22nd at the start of the day? We were right near the relegation zone anyway. Played Cardiff at home, who were are like the absolute most mid-table team in the league. They're I think they're mathematically they can still make playoffs, but they're not going to. There's no chance. We were crap. We were really, really bad, and the mood afterwards was one of I kind of can't see us getting out of this now. We've got easier because we. My logic was we have easier teams still to play, like Rotherham and Huddersfield and so on. But in terms of teams that have got a lot to play for, Cardiff rank right near the bottom. But we were really poor. Cardiff scored around the 70th minute mark. We created very little. The tempo was very poor. It was not what I'd expect of like a Rowett team. The atmosphere was really weak, and I don't blame the fans necessarily. But Tom Wagner had flown in for it, and it just wasn't. It was not a good night at all. And yeah, it was pretty alarming. My grade would be like a D, and I think that's a bit generous. We created a couple of chances. Like, I think Miyoshi hit the post at one point in the first half. So I've seen worse. It wasn't as bad as like the Middlesbrough game, which we lost 1-0 at home, which was true. That was I can't remember what grade I gave that, but it probably should have been an F, to be honest, if I didn't give it that. But yeah, it wasn't great. I'd struggle for a man of the match. I'll give it a D, and I'd give my three-word match review would be, no, I don't need three words. One word, chilling. It was a chilling performance.
Yeah.
It was like really quite worrying. But also, my mood was really strange afterwards because, we'll get onto it in the housekeeping, everything that had gone on the night before at the open house and stuff, but it was like my weird feeling about it all was going down to League One. It would not be obviously. I don't want it to happen, but my thoughts on it were: it's not what it would have been a few years ago, where the club would have been in huge financial turmoil. In general, now, as for reasons we'll get onto in the housekeeping, the future is looking quite bright at Blue. Is looking very, very bright at Blues, and I feel like a relegation would be more of a delay on it rather than a cancellation of it of any of like a positive future. But don't get me wrong, League One is not a farmers league. It's a really hard league to get out of now. But I think I was after the Cardiff game. I was like, I really can't see us going down now. We were 23rd at the end of the day, and I was like, I really can't see it now. And bizarrely, I've never ever felt like this. The thought of going to League One didn't. I was kind of up for it. It was weird. It was just, I don't know if you understand what I mean, but I was like, we've been in the championship for so long. I think this is our 13th or 14th consecutive year in the championship, 13th, I think. We finished in the bottom six for most of them. It's a losing as and underperforming has become part of the culture at the club. And I was like, honestly, I think a year in League One, I know that might sound arrogant because there's no guarantee it would only be a year, but it would almost just like we need to remember how to win again. And I was like, the thought of going down and having a more positive season, getting fans back in the stadium after we go on a hopefully a winning run, a really strong winning season, might not be the end of the world. The thought of some other away days. You live near Wickham. I could do Wickham away. Our other mate lives in Essex. We could do Leyton Orient away. Cheltenham. I went to uni in Cheltenham. Cheltenham away if they stay up. I was like, it'd be cool, man. Go to some new away grounds. Like, I don't know. Like, I was weirdly kind of up for it. So I actually wasn't as. There's been other years when I thought we were going down, and the thought of League One, I was like, oh, I can't do that. But I don't know. The thought of it just didn't scare me like it used to.
We spoke
But
about it a few, it might even have been a couple of. Maybe in January, I think is when we played Everton, how we were talking about relegation. Can it be a good thing? Because you have a you can have a losing mentality just staying up, just about staying up in whatever division year after year after year. And you might see a club like Brighton, for example, that put a good team together in the Championship, won the came second, sorry, and have just been able to keep carrying the momentum in a way to keep getting better. I mean, you look at us as well. When we got promoted, it's helped carry us forward. Losing mentality of just scrapping and staying up, it isn't good in the long term, really.
No, of course. I mean, look what Ipswich have done. Obviously, they were in League One for a few years, which is kind of a
They had
case
the
in
same
point
thing.
that.
They were in the Championship and just in the Championship for about 15 years, where they didn't go up and they didn't go down until they did go down.
So yeah, that was my kind of thoughts on it all afterwards. But obviously, the dynamic really changed at the weekend. So we'll get onto that soon. But obviously, Villa played on Thursday night, obviously switching over to the Europa Conference League. You played Lille at home. First of all, you were saying last week you were going to struggle to get to the game on time, or it might be a bit of a tight squeeze. Did you get to the game on time?
I did get to the game on time.
Fair enough.
I was able to slip away from work a little bit earlier than I was worried I was going to, and it just gave me that extra half an hour that I needed, really. So we did make the game on time, thankfully. Just about managed to grab some food inside the stadium. Literally, like, just got it, shoveled it in and into there. So really good night. Atmosphere was really, really good. The fireworks were great, the fireboxes. There
Oh,
was a
we had the
nice tea.
fireworks back as well. Yeah, I forgot to say. I put the fireworks back on you. Sorry, Karen.
Which maybe they weren't as the fireworks maybe weren't as good as they were for like Legia, for example, but that's just because of the time of the year where it wasn't dark. It was sort of dusk, and fireworks don't tend to be great in the lighter nights, but it was just about dark enough for them to sort of work. There was a nice TIFO banner in the whole end because obviously it was Unai Emery's 1,000th game in management, which is a really, really impressive feat to reach. Bear in mind when Steve Bruce
For his age
was
as well, yeah,
sacked.
it's not really old.
Because when Steve Bruce got sacked at Newcastle, he only got sacked a week later or 2 weeks later because of his 1,000th game in management. And we think of Steve Bruce as this proper journeyman. He was always managing. Yeah, impressive feat. I suppose he's been in a lot of European competitions, which is a lot of extra games. So his teams tend to do well in cups. I thought we were really, really good for the majority of the game. The Lille fans, by the way, outstanding. They were. There's been the one thing from these European games this year has been looking at the away ends and just seeing how different European fans are. They are like, they're nuts. Like, they're just constantly like bouncing, jumping up and down, thunder clapping. And so there might have been, there was a flare that went off during as the teams were walking out, and it's like the proper away days you'd die for, really. But yeah, back to the game. I thought we were really good. We got the early goal in the first half. Ollie Watkins with a header, for some reason, completely unmarked. After after their manager had very much said in midweek, Ollie Watkins is one of the best strikers in Europe. So obviously you don't mark him at a corner, but it's nonetheless, it's a very good header. And we looked pretty comfortable, really. There was Emi Martinez made a couple of really good saves in at the back end of the first half as we started to get into the period of the match where we tend to concede a lot of goals, which is in and around half time either side. I can't remember whether it was. I think we then got the second goal first, where we take a short corner. Leon Bailey sort of slips as he goes to cross the ball, and it comes all the way to John McGinn, who just passes it into the far corner. Limbs in the whole end were amazing. The noise around Villa Park when that went in, and in the 5-10 minutes afterwards, was amazing. And then sort of very similarly to the Brentford game, we sort of just took our foot off the gas a little bit. Lille had a goal that was disallowed for offside, which was very, very tight. We were all under the assumption that the semi-automated offsides would pick it up very quickly. So when the VAR check was going on, there was people behind me going, well, it can't be for offside because they've got the automated thing. But alas, it was offside. It was very, very close. Should have been the wake-up call to click back into gear. Annoyingly, it wasn't, and we did concede very, very late on in the game from a set piece. It's a poor goal to concede, and it was a bit flat the last bit of the game, and the feeling coming out of Villa Park wasn't what it really should have been because we had won the game. We have got a lead going into Thursday, but I think in the back of everyone's mind was 2-0 is such a stronger position to be in than 2-1. You know, all it takes is a very quick fire goal, and all of a sudden the game's it's game on, really. At least there's no away goals, though. So in terms of grade, I will give it a B because of the poor goal we conceded, and especially after we'd had that sort of warning. Man of the match, I'll give it to John McGinn. I thought he was very, very good on his return to the side. And I think in terms of a match review, in three words, solid first leg.
Yeah, it's Lille's home record really is absolutely formidable by all accounts as well. So I understand what you mean. And it's weird, like if you'd won 2-1 and you'd scored the second goal in the 90th minute, the dynamic would be completely different, and you'd probably go into it with a completely different mentality. But they're a very good team, so I wouldn't take a win of any kind. Probably is a very good result.
Yeah, it was just important that we won the first leg, especially with it being at home. There's no away goals, of course, so just want a draw. I'll take a boring 0-0.
Awesome. So moving on to the weekend. So Blues played Coventry at the weekend. Coventry at the start of the day were sitting about seventh, chasing Norwich for that kind of last playoff spot, really. Looks like third, fourth, fifth pretty much decided. They do have the FA Cup semi-final this weekend, though. So I don't know if that was on their mind, because we somehow, despite having such an awful midweek, playing a team that have had a far better season than us, been travelling in the right direction for a few years now, we somehow beat them 3-0 and had a... It was absolute night and day from Wednesday to Saturday. It could not have been more different on every level in terms of performance, in terms of work rate, atmosphere. I'm glad Tom Wagner was there for the Saturday game as well, because it was almost a sellout. It felt that the sun was out. It was just a great atmosphere. Complete contrast. They're the kind of games, you know, have been kind of few and far between for us for the last few years. And we were so much better. Coventry, in terms of like possession, obviously Coventry absolutely dominated it. I think they had about 70% possession in the end. But we scored early on. Keshi Anderson had a good move down the left, and he's put a ball in. It's gone in as an own goal. So we got a bit of luck there. And then after that, I felt like our errors and our like lack of composure on the ball, we just got lucky with it. Just didn't get punished a lot of the time. Like after we went 1-0 up, Coventry had a chance where, so the balls came down, like it's come, you know, long down to our end of the pitch, and John Ruddy's like charged out of his goal and like headed it clear. So the goal's completely open, and it's fell to a Coventry player who's sort of side footed. It's trying to lob Ruddy, and it's just instead, it looked like for all the world like it was going in. We sit behind that goal in the Tilton Road. On the upper tier, and instead it's just clipped off the bar and gone out. And it's like, so we got lucky with an own goal, we got really lucky with that there, and just like we looked really a bit uncomposed on the ball and so on at times, like and just sort of, I remember like Deontay Sanderson like shanking a clearance at one point, and it just kind of summed up one or two things, and it felt a little bit on edge. But then we managed to go 2-0 up. Ivan Sunjic scored from a corner, and it's his first goal of the season. And I don't know if you've seen it very much looked like he was in tears afterwards. So Sunjic has been with us for about 5 years now. And this is his fifth season. He's out of contract in the summer. I don't know if he's been told that, you know, that's it. He's definitely not coming back. But it looked like the emotion really kind of got to him. He's kind of been in and out of the team this season. Was playing a lot under Eustace, and then under Rooney kind of seemed to fall out of favour. And but he was outstanding. He was everywhere. I thought he was, like, obviously he got booked. He gets booked every game, albeit a bit harsh this week. But he was outstanding. I'm not just saying it because he was emotional or whatever. Like, he was exactly what we needed. It's players like Park Sung-ho are, like, infinitely more composed and skilled on the ball. But in this, like, relegation, like, dogfight, we need scrappers like Sunjic, you know, who are of that, like, Kiftan Bell mould. People who know just how to, you know, you are just going to charge around and give 110%. And he was exactly a bit of shithousery. And it was, Rowett deserves credit for putting him back in, because he was absolutely excellent. And then we scored, I think it was after about an hour, Jay Stansfield made it 3. I can't remember the last time I went to a 3-0 win. I don't even know if we've won a game 3-0 all season. I don't think we have. And it was a lovely goal as well. Tyler Roberts is, like, cutting from the left-hand side. And it's honestly, like, if like, Rodri does this, or De Bruyne or whatever, everyone's all over it, and he threads through a beautiful through ball. Stansfield tracks the run and then just threads it. I think it was just under the goalkeeper in front of the tilt. And the limbs were, they're the best limbs I've been in for quite some time, probably since the Leeds game, our first home game of the season. And we just coasted to it from there. It was absolutely terrific. Forever True by UB40 playing at full time, people singing along. It was the best I've seen it in a while. And Rowett deserves huge credit for changing the team up a little bit. Tyler Roberts had his best game in a blue shirt. I thought he was excellent. I thought he was really great. As I already mentioned, Sunjic was outstanding. But man of the match, Christian Bielik, who has kind of moved between midfield and centre-back since Mowbray came in. Mowbray saw him more as a centre-back. Rowett tried him back in the midfield again. But Rowett deserves a lot of credit for taking Ivy out of the team, who's become a little bit of a liability, putting Bielik back in at centre-back, and then that allowed him to put Sunjic back in midfield alongside Park Sung-ho. Bielik was... I mentioned, like, we looked like we lacked composure at times. Bielik was, like, the calming presence in defence, and also by far our best aerial defender of the day. He was absolutely excellent. And his composure to be able to get, like, Blues with, like, Stansfield up front, it's hard for us to, like, hit the ball long, you know, as people suggest us to. We kind of can't really do that because we don't really have, like, that target man. And so we are kind of more playing through the third still. And Bielik was able to do that from defence and start that sort of process. So, yeah, he was my man of the match. Best performance I've seen from a Blues player in a few weeks. I thought he was absolutely excellent. And now the whole dynamic has changed. So Plymouth won the night before, which was a bit of a sucker punch. They beat Leicester. But on Saturday, pretty much everything went our way. So Sheffield Wednesday started the day below us, and Stoke started the day just above us. Stoke are one to keep an eye on, by the way, because they are... I don't think people realise how in it they are. They're on such a bad run of form. Since they absolutely tanked us on Boxing Day, they've been all over the place. Them two drew each other, so that was kind of perfect. And then Huddersfield were 1-0 up, and Naki Wells scored a 100th-minute penalty for Bristol City, so in the 10th minute of stoppage time. So that coupled with our win...
Have you seen the decision as well?
I haven't. I heard it was
really
an absolute
bad.
Shocker.
Yeah, it's not as bad as the penalty Baggy's got against... was it Rotherham in midweek?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But it's not good. It's a bad decision.
Yeah, so I heard. No, but who cares? I'll take it. yeah, so they scored in the 10th minute of stoppage time, Bristol City, and that puts us out of the relegation zone by 1 point. So it's the hope that kills. Yeah, I've gone from Wednesday night being like, I think we're done, to now with us still to play. So we've got Rotherham this weekend. We'll get onto that. And then Huddersfield, two games we should win. That Huddersfield away game is probably the biggest Blues game in
12 months.
Yeah. So we didn't really have a relegation fight last year, did we, the year before? Not as much. I'd say it's probably our biggest Blues game for 3 or 4 years. It is huge. Absolutely huge. That I can think of off the top of my head anyway. And now, so yeah, we've got a real fighting chance now. I'm going to give it an... Just for the day and the event as a whole, I'm going to give it an A. It was a great day, despite some, like, you know, some little things about the performance and so on. Yeah, my man of the match was Bielik. My three word match review, survival is on. That's my three word match review. A couple of little things though. I still, despite the work rate being much improved, it was much more in line with what you'd expect of like a Rowett team. So I think he mentioned that there were some like home truths after the Cardiff game, and I think you could tell. Such was the reaction. A couple of little things which still, I don't want to just sound like a Roy Keane or a Graham Souness here or anything, but like I still think, like, so like little, I wish the players just showed that little, even if it's just for show to get the fans really going. Like, just the, there's so much more opportunity to show more fight, in my opinion. Like, there's a point at the, like, Stansfield was, he was in front of the tilt, and then a Cov player like pushed him. Off, like the ball had gone out of play, and he pushed him, and Stansfield like pushes him back, and the fans are like, "Yes, go on, Jay," you know. And then Tyler Roberts like comes over, and I'm like, Tyler Roberts is gonna go over and like, you know, give this Cov player a piece of his mind as well. And he kind of didn't. He just sort of went over and like, I think he like just picked the ball up and walked off to like get on with it. And I'm like, I don't know, I don't want to sound like I'm inciting like, you know, stupid behavior, because I'm not, but. Go over there, give him a push as well, Tyler Roberts. You know, like fight for your team,
A
mate.
bit
Like,
like, you know, when Arsenal played Liverpool at Anfield last year, and was it Xhaka and Trent Alexander-Arnold had a bit of a tiff, and all at 2-0, and all it did was lift the Anfield crowd.
Yeah, like it was. I just think fans. I'm not saying do anything stupid. Even just, I'm not saying obviously don't hurt anyone, obviously, but like your
Don't do what
teammate.
John McGinn did against Spurs, trying to do that.
Sure, like, but like your teammates in trouble. Even if it's just for show, go over there. Like, if that, you know, like Bowyer and Ferguson, like, if one of them was in trouble, like, the other one is there and he's like effing and blinding at him, you know, they wouldn't stand for that. And I think Blues still lack that, in my opinion. And there was like a similar point at the end of the game. We were already 3-0 up. Scott Hogan has came on. Scott Hogan hasn't scored since August. He scored like two goals in all competitions in the last year. He's just came on. We're already 3-0 up. Bakuna's coming towards the box on the left. Hogan's in the box. You're already 3-0 up, so what an ideal time to try and get a fourth goal, and you know, get a goal for yourself. And instead of like just putting in the sensible cross and giving us the best opportunity to score, Bakuna's putting this weird, instead of like whipping it in with his left, he's putting this weird like showboaty cross with the outside of his right foot, and it's just sort of fizzled out and gone to nothing. And like no one is calling him out for it on the pitch. Honestly, if I like. If I'm Scott Hogan there, I am effing and blinding at him. Like, if we go down on because of on goal difference, which could still happen, it was like, I don't know. I still think the team lacks little things like that, in my opinion. There's that. And just at times, the lack of leaders, I still think is apparent, despite it being, I don't want to sound like I'm moaning because it was a great day, a great game. But there's still, that's, in my opinion, areas that need addressing for next season if we do stay up. But anyway, yeah, it was an A, great game. Yeah, going on to Rotherham at the weekend.
Just on a slight tangent, because I meant to bring this up last week and I forgot. I saw a tweet, I think it was from the second tier pod, where they got the championship worst rated players for each club, minimum 900 minutes played this season. Shockingly to hear, Dan, Scott Hogan was Birmingham's worst rated player of the season, who's played at least 900 minutes or
Wow,
more.
I'm surprised he's that many played that many minutes actually, because it doesn't feel like it. But yeah, he's almost certainly going to leave in the summer, whether we stay up or go down. Yeah, like when that day comes, we'll probably talk about like his time at Blues as a whole, like a bit of a retrospective. We had some great moments with him, like his hat trick at West Brom last season was absolutely unreal. But yeah, this season's just not been for him at all. It's been a dreadful season. So yeah, it is what it is. I think, you know, someone like Stansfield's kind of had an amazing season and is far more in favour, obviously. But yeah, that was Blues. Shall we move on to the Villa game on Sunday? Because if we had a great day, I think you took it one further somehow on Sunday.
Yeah, it's weird how like my confidence for the Arsenal game sort of grew as the day went on. I didn't expect it. I mean, last week I said a point, I'd have taken a point and run before the game even kicked off. And then but I was still up for the game and I was still wishing I could get a ticket to go. And then obviously you had the Liverpool Crystal Palace game, which was on a two, so it was just before. where Palace got an unexpected win, Liverpool losing back-to-back games at Anfield, which is a rarity. And obviously that all of a sudden put quite a lot of pressure on Arsenal. It was a huge opportunity. They've been waiting for Liverpool to drop points for weeks. And I don't know, I would just remember, I was just there and I was thinking, you know, it had been a bit of a crazy week anyway. You know, Plymouth beat Leicester and then basically everyone at the top of the championship didn't win. In the Premier League as well, Liverpool just dropped points. It just felt like the feeling of one of those weeks where, I don't know, I just fancied us, out of nowhere, I just fancied us to get something. And obviously Arsenal, they came out of the traps very, very well. Fast starting. It took us a good 15 minutes to settle down, and it was really important that we didn't concede early on in the game, which thankfully we didn't. Diego Carlos and Emi Martinez were outstanding in that first half. Some critical blocks, some great tackles, and a world-class save amongst some very good saves as well. But at halftime, 0-0 was exactly what we wanted. Ollie Watkins, we'd almost taken the lead as well. Ollie Watkins hit the post on one of our very few attacks in the first half. And I was saying at halftime, just the longer this game goes on at 0-0, the more it will come into our hands, because obviously Arsenal will start to feel the pressure of they need to score, they need to win the game. And, you know, I just had the feeling that that stadium would start to get nervy the longer the game was at 0-0. And that would probably play into our hands a little bit. And the second half starts, and we were absolutely incredible from minute one of the second half. And Arsenal, fair to say, probably dominated the first half. They definitely had more of the play, the better chances, bar a sit in the post. They never really had a sniff in the second half. And it all accumulated in around the 60th minute, where Youri Tielemans almost scored goal of the season from a corner. And a lot, it's one of those where, like, you just wish it had gone in. It would have been such a satisfying goal. And it's hit the top of the crossbar, hit the side of the post, and somehow bounced out. How many times do you see that hit the two and just roll into the net? So, yeah, Tielemans only scores worldies. He doesn't do tap-ins, so... it's a shame that one never went in. And then Mikel Zaniolo went off with looked like cramp. He put in one heck of a shift, easily his best game in a Villa shirt. Alex Moreno came on, and he and Luka Dean combined very nicely to put a cross in which Leon Bailey finished very well from a very tight angle, even though he had a lot of the goal to aim at. 1-0, 84th minute. Unreal. That away end looked unreal. There was some serious movement in there. Obviously, Arsenal then are like, shit, we need to get a point out of this now. We can't lose the game. And they just threw kind of everybody forward, apart from Emile Smith Rowe, and Youri Tielemans pings a ball from deep in our half. Ollie Watkins starts his run from inside the half when the ball is played, so he's not offside. And a very cheeky, dinked finish over David Raya to make it 2-0 in the 89th minute. And I genuinely couldn't believe what I was seeing. A bit like when we played Manchester City earlier on this year and we battered them and took the lead. It was like very surprising. I couldn't believe it. An amazing performance. A tactical masterclass from Unai Emery. Easily an A-star performance. It's definitely the first A-star I've given since we started doing this format. And in terms of a three-word review, what a performance. Man of the match, could pick anyone. Obviously, I said Zaniolo was very, very good. Ollie Watkins was great. Youri Tielemans was absolutely fantastic. We went to Arsenal with no central defensive midfielders, played a double pivot of Tielemans and McGinn, and comfortably won the game. But Diego Carlos will be my man of the match because he was a big part in keeping us level at halftime, which allowed us to execute the game plan. It sounds like the game plan we had for this was very similar to what we tried to do at the Etihad a couple of weeks ago, but we just didn't have the personnel and we just couldn't quite pull it off. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And despite all our injuries, we can still bring top levels of performances. And that's the bar for the rest of the season now for when we go to Lille on Thursday. And then when we head towards Bournemouth, Chelsea, Brighton, Palace, Liverpool. Yeah, amazing, absolutely incredible. And obviously Newcastle did us a favour on Saturday as well, so we're now back into the top four and we are ahead by 3 points and on goal difference. So even if, depending on how, if Tottenham win their game in hand against Chelsea, depends how much, but it's sort of back in our own hands. And we will play again this week. Spurs aren't playing this week because the FA Cup, so they'll have two games in hand on us, but we have the opportunity to go 6 points ahead before they play again, which is the North London derby for them. And as they've still got to play the top three in the league and Chelsea yet. So
So they'll beat Chelsea, but then they got to play the top three as well. So,
I don't know,
you
their
know.
record against Chelsea is awful.
True, true. Chelsea aren't what they
So
were, though. But yeah, no,
no, but
true.
they're always up for the game against Spurs. Do you remember
True.
the year Leicester won the
Yeah.
league? Chelsea
Battle of
went
the Bridge.
terrible,
Yeah.
but Battle of the Bridge.
Yeah. It's got nothing on the Battle of Bramall Lane. People
Yeah.
forget that. But yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. Frustratingly, a perfect day for you. I don't think it can be described any other way. Frustratingly, kind of feels like the title. On a side note, like I know it's not, but it feels like the title race died on Sunday. Like I feel like
It
for all
does, yeah.
neutrals up from the title race, quite frustrating. See, Man City in pole position with like five, six games to go. It's never ideal because they'll probably coast to it now. But
And that they haven't got too many difficult fixtures really
I don't
either.
know how they do that. They never seem to have a hard run in. I don't know. Just I don't know. But anyway, I'm not going to get too into that.
Shall we get into the housekeeping?
Yes, do you have much on housekeeping on the Villa side?
A little bit, because there was a press release that came out yesterday, and it will lead quite nicely into your part of the housekeeping as well. So we had a club statement kind of out of the blue saying V Sports, which is the joint, basically it's like the two owners, Nassif Sawiris and Wes Edens. It's like they're like a holding company where they're buying into other football clubs, and they're all under basically under the Villa umbrella, but in the legal way, and to bring some more money into the football club. They announced the completion of a previously announced agreement with, I don't think I'm going to pronounce this right, but we'll try, Eterios, under which Eterios will become a minority partner in V Sports, and V Sports will continue to own 100% of Aston Villa Football Club and will continue to have full control of decisions at Aston Villa. I did a little digging, and there's a lot of rumour about Terios and what they are, and basically they're like a growth fund, a capital fund. I think they're American, and they're a company focused on supporting growth-orientated businesses. And the long and short of that is with the North Stand development being kind of canned by Chris Heck, there's a lot of talk and a lot of rumors very much coming up about the possibility of a new 60,000-seater stadium for Villa. I know, Dan, where on earth has this come from, I wonder?
You say you're not obsessed with us. We can't have anything nice, can we? You've got a one of us. Unbelievable.
There's been talk since the North Stand stuff got shelved, along with like the warehouse, which is still being adapted into something. Or is it going to be called the warehouse? It doesn't really matter anyway. But there has been murmurings for a lot of the season that since the North Stand got kind of canned, that Chris Heck would probably look to maybe move to a new stadium. And I very in very different circumstances to you guys who are looking at a new stadium, would be very, very controversial. Obviously, Villa Park, in it's the circumstances of the two clubs is so different. St Andrews has not been looked after and was falling down for a large portion of the last 4 years. Villa Park has been looked after and has been our home for a long, long time. And, you know, the whole end has still got the traditional side. Obviously, we should have kept the traditional Trinity Road when that got demolished. There is, I guess, at this moment in time, there is a capacity issue in terms of we could probably sell more seats, then we don't have the space for it. And so I understand why they want to try and increase the capacity at Villa Park, that the capacity is actually going to go down for next season because they've got to increase the disabled access, which means taking out extra seats for the disabled seats. Yeah, I don't know how I'd feel about it. I don't think we need a new stadium. I understand a new North Stand, which would bump the capacity up to around 60,000, I think is the perfect way to do it. In the same way that I couldn't see Liverpool leaving Anfield,
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not, and we'll see what happens, but there's a lot of things starting to point in the direction of some big infrastructure projects happening at Villa Park. The store at the ground is going to be double the size next year. They're knocking the back of it out and extending it, which is desperately needed if you want it, because buying something on a match day is a waste of time because the queues are horrendous. So, we'll see. We've also got a lot of money coming in next year with the new sponsorship, betting sponsor on the front of the shirt and the Adidas sponsorship deal. So, but yeah, we'll see. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I don't think I'd be a fan.
Yeah, it's I think there'll be like more of an acceptance about Blues leaving St Andrews in like the relatively near future, but I don't know if it'll be the same for Villa. For obvious like reasons of kind of the how the stadium has been maintained and so on to a relatively good standard. But yeah, interesting. But yeah, it's strange that it came out this week of all weeks that that news. Shall we get on to like the big
Yeah.
thing. So we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Birmingham Live, the Birmingham Mail, reported on this. But it was formally announced the day before the Cardiff game. Blues did the second open house with Tom Wagner and Gary Cook were both there, with a select group of people invited. The Second City Pod was not amongst them, sadly. But it was streamed though. So, but they basically announced that the club have purchased the Birmingham Wheels site a stone's throw from St Andrews from Birmingham City Council, and they have announced they are going to build a sports village, they're going to build a new stadium, and the ambition is mind-blowing. And I talked about how like at the car after the Cardiff game, how like the thought, you know, League One and the contrast to all that, and how the club was kind of failing. This came a day after, you know, what I don't think it's an exaggeration to say one of the biggest announcements in the club's history. This is a huge, huge deal. This is like a direct, I don't know how to describe it, not even an era defining. It's history defining for the club if this is all able to go ahead, which it, you know, it absolutely looks like it will be able to. So they want to build a sports quarter in at the Birmingham Wheels site that they have said they are going to spend 2 to 3 billion pounds on. This is like, it's mind-blowing sums of money. Just to clarify though, I think some people are getting it a little bit misconstrued. People have said obviously the most state-of-the-art stadium in the country now is Tottenham Hotspur, which is an unbelievable stadium. Everyone's saying that cost £1 billion and the Blue Stadium is going to cost £3 billion. I don't think that's accurate. I think they're saying the sports village they estimate is going to be £2 to £3 billion. So that's for like everything they want, like, you know, it's going to be a, you know, like when you go to Wembley now, it's not just Wembley, is it? There's like eateries, there's like
Box
restaurants, there's like
Park,
Bucks Park, there's like fan
the
zones. It's like
outlet,
a,
yeah.
yeah, the outlet, it's a shopping center. It's like a somewhere, it's like a place people go.
And also, inflation has gone up quite a lot since
Yes.
Tottenham built their stadium
Yeah.
in the last couple of years.
Yeah, but nonetheless, it is a mind-blowing sum of money. So the ambition is huge. And they're talking like Tom Wagner did an interview where he was saying he wants to, you know, he confirmed he wants to bring NFL to Birmingham, and he sort of made a joke about like, you know, if only we knew someone involved in the NFL at the club. You know, they clearly want to bring concerts. He said we want to host World Cup games, we want to host Euros games, we want to host internationals. And so then the interviewer asked, so we're talking like, you know, there's for games to be staged at those sort of tournaments, or like, you know, a Champions League final, it has to have a capacity of a certain, it can't be like a 20,000 seat stadium, obviously. And so the interviewer said, are we talking like 60,000 here? And Tom Wagner basically seemed to imply, yeah, that's sort of what we're looking at. That is just absolutely mind blowing. And you know, people are calling it's going to be the Wembley of the Midlands. It is so exciting. It's absolutely unbelievable. Obviously, we'll get in a separate day, we'll get into how sad it will be to leave St Andrews, but let's focus on the positives. It's going to be really remarkable if this all goes ahead. But yeah, so exciting. And kind of, yeah, a bit surreal, really. I don't, but also, it's going to be like, obviously, it's going to be right by the Curzon Street HS2 station. So clearly, the idea is people easy to get to, like, you know, if Taylor Swift or like you know, U2 are playing a big concert, they can play at this stadium and people from all over the country can get there really easily. And it's like Birmingham City Football Club, the name's going to be above the door, but we're going to be like, it's going to be our stadium, but we're going to be a fraction of the income of it. You know, it's like Tottenham Hotspur, one of the richest clubs in the world now all of a sudden, because they are bringing in income from NFL, from concerts, from, you know, it's such a great
the
investment
go-kart
for them.
track.
Yeah, like it's, you know, they can do so much with it. So yeah, and Tom Wagner said, if everything goes to plan, I think this is incredibly ambitious. He said, if everything goes to plan, and he seems to kind of be self-aware of it, like if everything goes smoothly, he wants us in and playing there by like 2029, which I think is nigh on impossible. That's like 5 years away. And these things always get delayed. Everton stadium move's been delayed by another year as of last week. Spurs were being delayed constantly. I think that's, I wouldn't be shocked if it's 10 years before we're in there.
And I think it's important to point out as well is the chances are this isn't really going to happen until you're at least fighting for promotion from the Championship. There's no way, but for many reasons. One, financial, and two, like any club that is near the bottom of the Championship, it's hard to sell out. We were the same. I know, look, it's fair to say we closed a big portion of the stadium when we went down because you can't fill it out. And it was only for like the second city derbies and the promotion running that we actually sold out week after week after week, a proper Villa Park capacity when we were fighting for promotion. When you're in the Premier League, everyone wants to go.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's different.
Yeah, I've seen people say like about, and it's, I get why people are saying it. They're like, well, you know, you had 20,000 at the Cardiff game last week. It was like, but there's no, why on earth would you build a 60,000 seat stadium for Birmingham City? Yeah, clearly, the, like, obviously right now we wouldn't sell that out, but clearly the ambition is to grow the club and improve the team to a point where that is feasible. Look at West Ham. West Ham get like 60,000 every week at the London Stadium. Now it's crazy. You know, Man City 20 years ago were at Main Road. Do you think if you told them now they'd be, I know they don't sell out every week, ironically, but like they have, they do have like, what, a 50,000 seat stadium, 55,000 seat stadium? Clearly the goal is to improve Blues to a point where we are like a regular fixture in the Premier League and having a stadium that would befit us. Clearly they want those two to line up. So yeah, super exciting. And I think, you know, I think for the city, it's an exciting thing, and yeah, something to look forward to. And hopefully we can, you know, keep progressing on the pitch to justify it. So yes, that's the new stadium. Another quick thing that has happened today. So last week, actually, Darren Carter left his position as the head coach of Blues Women. And it was announced today that Amy Merricks has been announced as the women's head coach at Blues. She's only 30 years old, but she's joined on a 3-year contract and will take charge at the Knighthead Training and Academy grounds for the first time on Tuesday. It said on the Blues website, most recently, Merricks was England Women's Under-19s head coach and between April and November of 2023 helped the Young Lionesses secure qualification for the second round of the 2024 UEFA Women's Under-19s Euros, where they won all of their games. So she's previously had experience at Brighton and has gained experience at Millwall and Gillingham, and at the League Managers has a League Managers Association diploma in football management. And holds the UEFA Pro license. She's obviously going to be teaming up with Hope Powell, who is at the club now. Who used to manage England Women. Blues Women are in a bit of a weird position in the Championship. They've kind of tailed off a bit. Lost to Charlton last week, they're currently sitting fifth in the league. They're definitely not going to go up this year. And I think after last season, where they missed out on promotion back to the WSL by 1 point, it's maybe been seen as a bit of a disappointment. A bit of a shame to see Darren Carter leave. He's been at Blues Women as the manager for about 2.5 years and obviously is a club legend. There's been a few rumours that him and Hope Powell don't really see eye to eye, but I can't really comment on that. I don't know any more about that. There's been nothing to really back that up. But yeah, we wish Amy Merricks all the best and hopefully see Blues Women back in the WSL very soon.
Shall we get on to the fixtures for this week? So we've got a double game week again. You've just got the one game, I believe.
Yep.
Is it your away day in Rotherham this week?
It is, yes. I thought we were on away kit this week because, yes, I'm going to Rotherham away on Saturday. But should we start with, you're playing first.
Yeah.
You're playing Lille on
Yeah, so let's get Lille out of the way. Away, we're winning 2-1. For the love of God, Villa, don't lose the match. And we'll see who we get in the semi-final. It's going to be very, very tough. I think it's going to be one of the most hostile atmospheres we play in this season. just judging by what their away fans were like at Villa Park on Thursday. It's the early kickoff. It's like the 5:45 PM kickoff. So don't forget, because it'd be easy to miss it. Yeah, I'm going to be excited and very, very nervous when that rolls around. But European quarterfinal, second leg, we're leading. It's what it's all about, isn't it? It's what we want to be aiming for regularly. It looks like we're going to be in Europe again next year, whatever competition that is. So bring it on, really. I think it'll be tough. I will go for a 2-2 draw because we don't do things the easy way. But I do think we'll score. I just can't see us keeping a clean sheet. But if we can perform like we did against Arsenal on Sunday, we'll do very well. But
yeah,
I don't think we will. It's a completely different type of game, really. But yeah, 2-2, and we'll go through on aggregate.
Yeah, I think it's almost a bigger test of character than that Arsenal game, going to that little stadium. It's going to be absolutely ferocious. Yeah, Blues. So, as I say, I'm going to Rotherham away on Saturday. Looking forward to that. Huge game. This and Huddersfield are absolutely huge. Rotherham are rock bottom of the league. They haven't won a game. And yeah, I think they've lost their last three games and they won the one before that. They're on 23 points currently. And they, if they don't pick up another point between now and the end of the season, they will equal the worst ever points tally for a championship team in sort of the championship era. So you're talking like the last sort of 20 years. They would match their own worst record, which they set in 2017 with 23 points. They are shit. I'm saying all this now. They drew 0-0 at our place and they probably should have beaten us. Watch us tank it now. Be very typical of Blues, but hopefully not, of course. We should beat them. We've only won three away games all season. They've got nothing to play for, though. We had a huge result of the weekend. We've got so much to play for now. I think Rauch should just name an unchanged team. Those players earned the opportunity, in my opinion, to all start the game. Yeah, we should do it. I'm going to say 2-0 Blues. Again, a big test of the character, though. Like a game now that they should win. You know, it is a must win. If we can get a huge result there and other results go our way, it really can set us up for survival, hopefully with a game to spare. I say all this, I don't see that happening because it's Blues and we'll probably leave it till the last day. But yeah, Rotherham away, I think we'll win 2-0. Yeah.
And then on Sunday, we have Bournemouth. I bought my ticket this morning, so I'm going to Villa Park again on Sunday. Again, going to be a tough game. Obviously, we'll have played on the Thursday and that game could go to extra time and penalties as well. So we'll see how much energy we have left in the tank, I suppose. Bournemouth are a very good side. Their league position doesn't really do justice how good they are, just because they were winless in the opening 10 games. They've sort of been playing catch up after that. We had a very, very difficult game when we went to Dean Court earlier on this year. So, I think I'll still back us to win, but maybe 2-1. I think it'll be very close, very tight. Again, I just can't see us keeping a clean sheet because we don't tend to do it. There'll probably be some rotation in there as well, I would imagine. So it looks like Matty Cash is back. He was on the bench against Arsenal, so I would expect him to play and start one of the next two games for definite, and we'll probably see an Alex Moreno, Luca Dean switch or something in there. Douglas Luiz is still banned for the Bournemouth game, so he'll definitely play in Lille, but he will not play against Bournemouth. That's about it, really, for this week. Another bumper edition of the Second City podcast.
Yeah, but it's so much to talk about, so much going on as we go into the home straight. So we will wrap it up there for this week. If you're going to any of the games, stay safe and enjoy it from wherever you're watching it or keeping up with it from. And until next time, Cal, keep right on. Follow us on all our socials, Second City Pod, 2ND City Pod.
Yep, subscribe, thumbs up, get the bell on YouTube, 5-star reviews on Spotify. Yeah, everyone going to Lille, have a safe trip, have a great trip as well. And everyone else, I will see you at Villa Park on Sunday at 3:00. Until next week, Dan, up the Villa, and I'll see you next time.
Shit on the Villa, keep right on. Take care.